We have with us Marc Toulouse. Marc Toulouse is one of the high flyers in the startup world. So we are really happy to have you here today, Marc. He is the CEO of Mangrove and chairman of Wix. Mangrove manages $850 million and focuses on early stage investing across Europe. And Wix is listed on the NASDAQ and has a market cap of $3 billion. Marc grew up in Africa. He went to the university in the US, and he has lived in Europe for 25 years. He's interested in weird ideas, and he engages with entrepreneurs who wants to disrupt the norm and change the world. He was the seed investor in two real unicorns, Skype and Wix. In Barcelona, he's a shareholder of Wallapop, Buddy, and most recently, he has invested in Redpoints, where we have seen a massive growth. Marc is going to be interviewed by Laura Urquizo, the CEO of Redpoints, a company that is changing the game in brand and copyright protection, as well as preventing the distribution of illegal content online. Laura is driving the worldwide adoption of Redpoints technology, expanding the company with a very significant market penetration through Europe and the US. She previously had executive and management positions in big companies, and she has also been part of the board of different technological companies. I have to say that as one of our first investments, we are very proud of the performance of Redpoints, the evolution of Redpoints. And as I said before, Mangrove invested last year in them, and Marc has played a key role supporting the CEO to drive the company to a fourfold growth. So together, we think that Marc and Laura are very well placed to talk how a VC can help the growth of a company. Laura, Marc, thanks for coming to today. The floor is yours. The floor or the altar. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Yolanda. I'm very pleased to be here with Marc. That Marc, as Yolanda said, he's the CEO of our main investor in Redpoints. And I will say also a mentor for the company, because as he was just saying, they're cheerleaders, but very good cheerleaders, I can tell you. So we should start with the questions, Marc.
Okay, sure. Yeah? Okay. First of all, I can tell you guys, the view from here is awesome. Okay, you guys have that view, but we have this one, and it is with the blue on there. It's awesome. I'd like to say before I get the questions, you know, I just love Barcelona, and I love Barcelona for a number of reasons. But you know what? Nowadays, there's so many startups, so there's even more to love about Barcelona than ever. And so as Europe starts creating a number of ecosystem areas where the startup world can take place, the ecosystem works when people like me and people like Laura can also work with folks from Banco Sabadell. It is truly an ecosystem that matters. And we're beginning to see this happen in a number of cities in Europe. And I think if you try and fast forward, and that's usually my job, is looking into a crystal ball, I think Barcelona is going to be one of those European tech hubs. It has so much to offer, both in lifestyle and education purposes, that it is just great. And so personally, I want to thank Banco Sabadell for inviting me, number one, but also for putting on such a fabulous show. This is so important for us as we try and push entrepreneurship to the next level. Everybody has a role to play. And much of the questions I'll be answering today are around my views of what it takes to be successful there. So thank you for coming and wanting to listen to some of the words I'll be saying today. And certainly, you know, make sure you recognize that in Laura, you have one of the best startup CEOs that I have ever worked with. Now, I've given her my money, so I maybe have to say that. But I will tell you that it is absolutely fabulous to work with a CEO of a company who really, in a year, triples her revenue, is deciding she wants to triple it again next year. The dynamic that I find here is just fabulous. And so Red Points is dealing with a $1 trillion problem that the world has, and that is fake merchandise, right? I'm not sure if you know this, but on Amazon, 20% of all the products are fake. On Alibaba, that's 50. So those Calvin Klein underwear that you thought were cheap, they're probably fake, right? And Laura is doing everything she can to help companies protect their brands from Barcelona, right? So this is the amazing thing, is her customers are Disney and a number of other great companies from here. And so this is the greatest proof that the internet is an equalizing tool for everybody. You can do it from here. You can do it from at Skype. We did it from Estonia, right? At Wix, we're doing it from Israel. And so the internet is an equalizer, and Barcelona has a role to play. And man, oh man, am I glad to be involved with Red Points. It is an exciting company, and we think it's really the next big one we have. So thank you for taking the time to interview me as well.
Well, thanks to you, Mark, really. So, well, after this, we should really start with the questions. And I'll go with the first one. That is, in your professional career of more than 20 years now, could you tell us what lessons have you learned? And you have invested in really successful companies like Skype or Wix. How was the experience of investing and accelerating them?
Yeah, so when you get involved with companies like that, it's like a drug, right? You want to do it again. It's a 10-year journey for Wix. Skype was much faster. That was like a 3-year journey, right? But the point is, the journey is so quick and it's so exhilarating that I always tell a funny story. Is for so many years, I was well known for Skype. And I have a son and a daughter, and my son kept telling me, haven't you done anything else? Like Skype, I'm tired of hearing a Skype, you know. And then we finally took Wix public in 2013, and I could tell him, yeah, I did Wix, right? But there's a hunger to want to be part of this journey repeatedly. And so when you talk about what are the lessons, the number one lesson that I have learned is the role I play when I invest in companies is to make sure that they are thinking big enough, right? You need to believe that you can conquer the world. Remember, investors, we're like professional amputators. We take your dream, we cut it in half and cut it in half, and before we know it, oh yeah, it's a reasonable market. Well, our role is to make sure that Laura knows that we are there for her to build the biggest company she wants to build. And so when I think about that, as I say, make sure you dare to dream. This is the company sentence we use, is, we want to make sure you're enabled with that. Dare to dream big, because only you can make the company be successful, right? Investors are fine, we're cheerleaders, but at the end of the day, in the case of Red Points, Laura is going to make it happen with her team. And so dream and think big, right? And we were fortunate that we thought big and got lucky with Skype in the early days, right? In 3 years, we went from zero to $3 billion in valuation. That's big. So that allowed us to be credible when we said this. So at Wix, before we took the company public, we had an offer from a company called Vistaprint. If you know that, Vistaprint has offices here in Barcelona. They offered us around $400 million to buy the company. We said no, because I went to the founders in Tel Aviv and I said, think big. 400 is already big. But today we're worth $3 billion, right? And so fundamentally, it's about that. That's the lesson I would say is probably the number one thing, is have the confidence in yourself to think that you're going to take over the world. That's what startups are about, right? If not, go work for another company, right? But if you're going to be in a startup, you know, wow, have the ambition, right? Dream big. That's kind of my big lesson.
Great. Great lesson. And Mark, how do you choose the startups in which you invest? What are the main characteristics that make you think that it can be a great company in the coming years?
So, you know, beyond the obvious stuff that my team does, which is look at market size and look at all sorts of goofy figures, right? What I care about is the passion. When I meet an entrepreneur, I want to know that entrepreneur is so passionate about what he or she wants to build that I'm going to get excited to hang out with that person because they're going to captivate me with their dream. I am absolutely not interested in dealing with somebody who doesn't have that view of the world. And so if there's many entrepreneurs in the room, remember, right? At the end of the day, passion is what drives you. This is a long plan. A startup is 7 to 8 years. You're going to be passionate along that time frame. And so when I think about it, people always say, so do you have like one thing you look at? Well, passion is pretty high up on my list as to, wow, you know, if that person, when they pitched me or they talked to me, when I walked away, I said, man, if I give them money, I am sure they're going to, you know, go all the way to try and make it work. And that's the issue. Startups are that way. You have to want to do that. So passion is really a fundamental building block of any startup.
Very good. You were the first investor in Skype.
Yeah.
Could you explain the keystones of Skype exponential growth?
Well, Skype was interesting, right? Ooh. Can you hear me? Yeah. So Skype was interesting in that we invested 6 months before they launched the product. And they had a vision of wanting to change the telecom market. That's pretty ambitious, right? So I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And the founders had actually before, they had built a company called Kazaa. So they knew how to grow a company. That happened to be an illegal company, but they knew how to grow companies fast. And 6 months after we invested, we launched the product. In the first month, we had 3 million users. First month. You know, within the first year, we had 25 million users. And what is the lesson there? How do you do that, right? Well, Skype was the perfect example of a viral product. Today, everybody talks about having virality in their products, right? Most companies don't have anything viral about their products. Skype, the very simple thing is for me to use it, I had to get Laura to use it. And for that to happen, that was the virality effect. And so we grew so fast along the way, and we made a number of mistakes along the way. You know, one of those mistakes was, oh, let's try and monetize everything that we do. But the key success of Skype was the freemium nature of its business model. You can use my service as much as you want for free. And when we started that model, people told us, well, you're insane. How are you ever going to make money with this thing? At Skype, we knew how to do that because we knew that to make a phone call outside of the Skype network, we could charge you and you would accept it. And so that's been fundamentally a couple of those key points, right? The other one is China was massive for us at Skype. I think without expanding into the Chinese market, Skype would not have been what it was. And we had a very good partner that we did it with there. And it helped us sustain this massive growth over a number of years. The Chinese didn't pay us a lot, so when we think about our paying customers, we didn't get very many from China. But that was not the point. The point of Skype was creating this massive network out there of people that can talk to each other, and we were able to do that. So China was the second kind of big lesson that we learned along the way is ignore China at your peril. Right? That's absolutely important. And that is true. That is a message that as a venture capitalist, I really constantly beat my portfolio of companies up with. It's, you know, it's great to be active in Spain. It's great to be active in Europe. It's great to look at the US. But take a bit of time and look the other way. There is a big market out in Asia where there's opportunities as well. So, yeah.
Very good. Very interesting. I have listened to you saying how surprised you are by a startup that they don't believe in the crucial importance of marketing. Mm. What is your advice on that?
Well, so 99% of all the companies in the world need marketing, right? Only Skype. We spent $10,000 on marketing, and that's because the founder wanted to see his picture at the Stockholm airport. Who knows why? That's what he wanted for Christmas, so he got it. But, you know, or Google, the product is so fabulous, right, that you use it, or Facebook. So that's like 1% of the companies. All other 99%, most of you in this room, you need to be discovered. Somebody has to find you. And to do that, you have to use marketing. There's a number of ways you can use marketing, right? But the unfortunate part in the technology environment, in the technology entrepreneurship, which is often managed by engineers, the view is there's first engineering that matters, right? And I build this great product, and marketing is kind of just going to happen along the way. Now, most internet companies spend, think about this, between 35 and 45% of all of their expenses are on marketing. So most of the companies don't take it very seriously, particularly at the founding level teams. And so when we invest in companies, we want to be sure that in that founding team, there's actually somebody who understands what marketing is about, right? Technology skills and capabilities is what you have to have just to be in the game. Marketing is what gets you to pop above everybody else and get attention and get notice and get users and get customers. Without both, you simply don't survive, right? So as by way of an example, at Wix, Wix is not at all a viral product. So for those of you who don't know Wix, I'll give you a 2-second pitch. Wix is the place you can build websites for free. You want a website for anything, for this event, go to Wix, build it for free. We don't ask you to pay. We have 125 million people using our product for free, right? But you don't know who they are unless I market to you. I have to do commercials on TV, I have to do commercials on YouTube and all sorts of stuff. We've done 3 Super Bowl commercials in the US at Wix. We spend this year $150 million on marketing so that people know who we are. And unless we have a world-class marketing team, that $150 million is wasted. And so my advice is build marketing skills as early as possible with the highest quality people you can have, and don't make the trade-off. I'm going to first focus on engineering and I'll figure out how to market it later. That is absolutely a bad trade-off.
Very good. And you also give a lot of importance to storytelling.
To?
Storytelling.
Storytelling, yeah. So as a venture capitalist, I get to see maybe 1,000 opportunities a year. We get 2,000 into our firm, and I'm flabbergasted by how poor sometimes entrepreneurs are at telling their story. And I always say to everybody that when you walk into a movie theater or you turn on the channel and a movie shows up, you know whether you're going to like that movie in the first 3 minutes or not. Because that movie has reached out and it's captivated you or it's bored you. Whichever one it is, you're going to take an action. And so I fundamentally think that storytelling is a skill that you can learn, but you are not necessarily born with it. And so if you're a tech entrepreneur, I encourage you highly to tell your story to yourself, repeat it 1,000 times, but repeat it. And I'll give you an example. I have a friend of mine, he's an actor. He's been in a number of Tarantino movies. And he came to Barcelona, Laura has met him. He came to Barcelona last year, we did an event with our best CEOs. And the story and the topic was storytelling. And this guy's name is Walton Goggins, and he's a great actor. And he gave a 30-minute speech. And the 10 CEOs we had, they were like, God, he's so awesome. And then he told them, I've been practicing for 3 days. He's like a world-renowned actor, talking to a bunch of tech guys and ladies, sorry. And he practiced for 3 days. Now, most tech entrepreneurs, they don't practice for shit. They think that, you know, they'll come and kind of wing their slides when they're talking to me. I'm like, if I'm bored after 5 minutes of your speech, my eyes glaze over, I reach for my phone, and I'm answering WhatsApp messages. And you've wasted your time, right? So storytelling is such a fundamental skill about your own company, but also how you raise capital. But I bet if I asked the entrepreneurs in this room here, most of you wouldn't practice significantly that storytelling process. And I promise you, you're making a mistake. So yeah, I think storytelling is so key, mm-hmm. So key.
Interesting. Could you explain how do you help entrepreneurial teams and what aspects do you work on? Which areas your investor support has been more influenced?
Yeah, I mean, every company is different from what they want from us. I would say that I classify myself and my firm as a cheerleader, first and foremost.
Yes. Right?
Entrepreneurship is a lonely place. Most CEOs of startups are on their own. Lau is the CEO of a company. Of course, she has a team, but the responsibility lies on her shoulders. And what you need when you're in that position, you need the ability to have somebody that you can turn to and talk to in good and bad times, because every startup has ups and downs, right? This is not always a great journey. And so I would say the first thing we do is just accompany the entrepreneurs and the founders and the CEOs in being positive about what they're doing, and that's why I say we're a great cheerleader. We do a lot of things like helping fundraise. We think that's an important role of a venture capital. Lau, of course, has to meet other investors, but unless I tee it up, so to speak, you know, they're also seeing 1,000 deals a year. So I have to go to bat for Lau. And we've just recently been through a fundraising process. Mm-hmm. And so it's very fresh in how we've worked together in doing that. But investors need, if you're looking for investors, you need to be sure they have the network also to help you fundraise. There's a number of other things, but I think cheerleading is the one thing that I think we're good at, right? Be the best cheerleader you can. Don't micromanage your companies. Here in Europe, we have a tendency of micromanaging. The US is a little less that way, but in Europe, we love to micromanage. In Israel, where I invest, they're micromanaging like hell. Investors will come to see their startups, you know, 6 times a week, 2 hours, you know, and thinking, I'm like, well, if you want to do that, join the startup. Don't be an investor. You know, I want to work as little as possible in my life, so I don't want to run red points. But at the same time, Lauren knows whenever she needs me, I'm available, and I'll do whatever it takes to help make her successful. But first and foremost is her success. So.
Well, I can really tell that it is like that. Mark, his team, and Mangrove, they're great with helping startups, supporting the CEOs. In my experience, the fundraising we just went through, that we are closing in 15 days, it couldn't be the same without them. They brought networking, they were helpful, we discussed many topics, and at the end, we got 5 term sheets, and we had to decide. And it was they were great helping, that's true.
I mean, look, investors are a necessary evil in some cases, right? You need money to grow. Not all startups have ever taken venture capital. If you don't have to take venture capital, I recommend you don't. Own 100% of your company. That's a better idea, right? But if you do want to grow fast, and in the internet today, speed does matter. You do need to grow fast. Then be selective, if you can be selective with the investor. Make sure you spend time with them. It is a 7 to 10 year marriage that you get in, which is for me why beyond passion, you know, the type of founder that we're gonna back is fundamentally important. I need to know before I write my check to the company that I can trust Lau. On most of the failures that we've had, and as I said, we have a 50% failure rate of companies. On the failures, I can always go back to a mistake in appreciating the founders for me. I thought she or he was like this, and we ended up clashing in the process. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tolkien, you mentioned speed in management. Do you think that speed works for any kind of business?
Well, with the internet, speed is the only thing that matters. And so I think speed is a mindset. Right? And if you want to be active in the internet, you better have that speed mindset. Since your children, your parents have been telling you, one human year is like 7 dog years. You've heard this before? No? Well, in the US at least that's what we say, you know. So my dog, he's 10, well, he's like 70, you know, like me, because they age faster. Well, the internet's a bit the same way. You know, 1 real year is like 7 internet years. And so at the internet, you gotta move super, super fast. It's a mindset. Because believe me, if you're not doing it fast, somebody in Timbuktu is thinking about that idea. And if you have just a little success, then you're gonna have a number of people copying what you're doing. right? And so speed, unless you take it upon yourself to recognize, I need to constantly be thinking about speed. I need to be pushing my teams to thinking about speed. If you don't do that, very quickly, you'll get taken over by somebody else from somewhere else. The world is so flat today that you have great entrepreneurs coming out of China. You're going to have them coming out of Africa soon. You have them coming out of the US, out of here. If you want to be a special company, speed is absolutely key. But I say, first and foremost, it's a mindset. You don't have the luxury to say, I'll think about it next week. You solve the problem now, today. Do it quickly. Test quickly your product. Engage with customers quickly. You do not have the luxury. People always say, yeah, figure it out. Get it right before you go do a lot of marketing, right? Sure. Just don't take too long to get it right. Because if not, somebody else is going to do it for you. So, yeah, we're big proponents of speed. It's the mindset that we look for when we look to entrepreneurs is make sure you convince me that you are going to be working 6 days a week, 18 hours a day. I'm absolutely not interested in a founder in a company who believes that it's his right to have Saturday and Sunday off. If you want that, go work for a company. The internet and technology startups are about speed, speed, speed. The mindset has to be there. I work on weekends. My wife is here. She can attest to that. So I apply to everybody else what I apply to myself. Speed is important.
Yeah. And Mark, before you were talking about passion. How can an entrepreneur keep up over the years?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, passion. So I wrote a blog post some time ago. I was fortunate to spend some time with the founders of Wix, and I have a company in Los Angeles called Freedom Pop. They're a mobile company that essentially gives away mobile data to get you as a customer. And I spent time with both teams together. And what I saw is that Freedom Pop at the time, they were 4 years old, and the passion of the founders was still high. And at Wix, they were 8 years old, and the passion was still very, very high. And so the entrepreneur journey, is so long that unless you're capable of keeping that level of passion high, you will fail. And by passion, I mean you need to make the company you're building the center of your life. That's what it is. And yeah, you have kids and you have a family and everything, but man, that company is the center. And the minute you start thinking that that's not the case, you're in trouble. So sometimes this sounds a bit excessive, but every single massive success that I know of, some that I've been involved with, many that I've not, when you actually meet the entrepreneurs, you see in them 5, 6, 7, 10 years later, the fire and the passion to be successful. If you're fortunate not to be in technology, you can be a little slower about it. But if you're in technology, the trends and the cycles are so quick that you don't have the luxury to say, I get a little more time. So passion is something you have to keep. If you lose it, you'll lose your company.
Let's change the topic dramatically now. And let's talk about gender diversity. I know your point of view, but I'd like you to share here your point of view.
Yeah.
About gender diversity, how important it is for the companies, if it is a successful key for the companies,
yeah.
And what is your experience in your portfolio companies?
Yeah. So gender diversity, of course, right now is at the top of everybody's mind, not least of which because we're hearing all the stories come out of the US about all these old men who've not been particularly nice in the past. And certainly in the tech world, we've been trying to figure out how to do this right. In my mind, gender diversity is a must because it works. It works. I have seen it work. At Wix, we have 2,000 employees, 40% of women, 60% of men. And what you get with that diversity there is you get an exceptional thinking process. Women look at problems fundamentally different than men, and this is not something one should be afraid of, but you should embrace it. And so when I think about Wix and why we're worth $3 billion today, I attribute gender diversity as being one of the two or three most important things that we did in that company. And so as an investor, we're big proponents for gender diversity. And if I now go and look at some of our other companies that Laura knows as well, on average, we have about 35 to 40% women in our portfolio companies now, across the board of all activities. And it is something I cannot imagine living without. So that if you're in a company and you look around and say, there are no women here, take that as a red alert that you're in trouble. Because you need to be able to look at problems through different prisms. Women and men have different prisms. Embrace it, don't be afraid of it. It sounds so easy when I'm saying it. But man, are we different, right? What's that book? Women are from Mars, men are from Venus, or the other way around, I forget what it is. That is so true. That is so true, right? And there's nothing wrong with saying that, as long as you recognize that the value that you get out of that is going to be superb. And so in my biggest success in venture capital, which is Wix, we have made that. At the beginning, we didn't purposely design it that way. It just kind of went that way. And we've been encouraging it ever since. We believe that has to be at all levels of the company, including the board, because you need to view the world through that different prism. So, yeah, I'm pretty passionate about this. I think it is important. I have a daughter. Of course, I have a wife. And we live this at home. Equality is what drives who we are. But you know what? In companies, it just works. I don't do it. I don't say it because for some passionate vision. I have seen it work at Wix. We are a better company because we have this diversity. And so my message to most male entrepreneurs is, if you're starting a company, make sure you hire women. And if you don't, well, first of all, you're going to have me on your back asking you why you're not doing it. Because, you know, the typical excuse is, well, you know, I got all these guys, they're good too, huh? Yeah, sure, of course they're good too. Nobody's saying men are bad, right? It's just that balance is important. So, you know, if you only remember one thing of me tonight, you know, remember that gender diversity works. I have seen it, I have lived it, I'm encouraging it. And if you don't do it in your companies, shame on you.
Very good. Well, the last question now. What do you think, Mark, that are going to be the next big things for investors? And what are your challenges, not only for investors, but in general, in technology, society? And what are your challenges there?
So, you know, as a venture capitalist, we were taught to have a crystal ball. You hope that you can see into that crystal ball and see a number of things. This is what entrepreneurs have to do as well. When you decide to sacrifice 7 years of your life to a company, you better sacrifice it to the right trend, right? That trend is long, and you have to build a company, not that is successful today, but you have to build a company that's going to be successful in 5 years. And as a result, you need to have a crystal ball and figure things out, right? When we take our crystal ball out, and we take it out once a year to think about the future, and I go away with my team and we think, and the last time we did this was in April. So I'll kind of give you the sense of what we decided in April was part of our crystal ball. There were three things that we came out saying that we had to pay attention to. One is there are not enough companies out there who are building products for old people. The pyramid of age is such in Western countries, Europe and the US, pardon me, that for the next 25 years, the demographic of 65 and plus is going to be big. Yet there are very few companies offering services for that demographic. And let me give you a couple examples of what I mean. There's a lady in France. She has a YouTube channel. She has 2 million followers. She's 70 years old. And her channel is only about how to apply makeup when you're 70 years old. Now, I'm a man, I've never applied makeup. And I didn't realize that Well, it would be different if I'm 25 or 70. I didn't realize this. She has 2 million followers. That tells me there's a business opportunity, right? And so there are products that you can design for that demographic. You don't always have to be building products for, you know, the 18 to 25-year-old. That demographic, by the way, is often rich. That demographic, by the way, often has cash. And they're looking for solutions that satisfy them, right? The second example, staying with that one, is my father was having trouble reading the numbers on his phone. So I thought I'd be really smart and got him a phone in the U.S. There used to be an MVNO called Jitterbug. Maybe some of you guys know that company. It was like a big phone like this with big numbers on it. And I remember giving it to my father one day, and he looked at me and said, "What the hell is this?" I said, "Well, it's your new phone with big buttons." And he said, and I'm going to say it, it's a bit crass, but I'll say it. He says, "Fuck off." "Did you understand me?" he said. And I'm like shocked. I didn't get, what's he saying? And he says, "It makes me look old, that phone." So you see, when you design products for that generation, if you're building a phone with big buttons, it's never going to be successful. But so kind of one of the big trends is that one. How do you build businesses to tap into that demographic? I think it's going to be just massive. And anybody doing that, I'm massively interested in talking to you. Okay. The other one is everything around cyber currencies and things like that. There's no question in my mind that cyber currencies and, you know, it won't be Bitcoin, but some version of that is going to be a massive success. And we're going to see, pardon me, over time, a lot of business processes use the underlying blockchain technology to do things in a safer and better way. And we're in the early days of that, and that's a very, very, very big trend. You know, that's sitting out there. And so that's something else we take out of our crystal ball. How do you do? We're in the process of investing into a currency. We'll be announcing it in a couple weeks, so we're taking a bet on a currency. Our view is that Bitcoin is what it is, $10,000, whatever, but it's a bit relatively unsafe currency, too much volatility, so somebody's going to build a currency. I hope it's the guys that we've picked, but there's a number of other people out there. That's a rather long-term bet that we're taking, right? So that's an important part of the future as well. And then everything related to health. We have recently funded a company in New York called Kang. The product is actually called K. It's a app you install on your phone, and it behaves like a doctor. It asks you questions, you give it answers, and it tells you what you have. It's an Israeli entrepreneur living in New York. He cut a deal with the largest HMO in Israel. He has patient records. He's building a big data company to be able to drive you having a better diagnosis. This is the beginning, though, of how health is going to change. So the opportunities in health are massive. That's one example that I funded. Somebody today asked me about my anti-portfolio of companies that I wish I'd invested in. And there's one in Germany, pardon me, and the name is escaping me now, because when you miss it, you try to forget it, of course. But it's a company that they have multiple millions of people using it, and it essentially is an app to help women track their fertility periods. Oh, yeah. Right? And I'm like, really? You need an app for that? Well, there's millions of women who are using it. So why? And that's the third part of our mall is health, particularly as it's associated to certain populations, is going to be a big trend. So those are things that we're looking at on top of our normal stuff as we look about it. What we know is speed is going to continue to be a massive trend in those areas. And so the other thing that we're seeing is that you don't have to go to the U.S. to build your successful company anymore. Skype was really Europe's first big unicorn. There have been a number since, popping up in the UK, in France, in Germany. We haven't really had one yet in Spain, to my knowledge, but hopefully Red Points is the next one. But I think you can stay here and build your business safely from a number of locations, and that, at least from somebody who likes Europe, is really a welcome thought. So overall, that's kind of our view of the world and things like that.
Well, thanks a lot, sure. Mark. It was such a luxury to have you here today in Barcelona. I hope everybody enjoyed it as much as I did. Sure. And thank you.
Okay, great.